Seminar, Agelessness. Lecture number 21. Agelessness is being aware of absolute. Defining absolute requires awareness of infinity, a step toward being released from the relative. Absolute is a gentleness of self. Absolute is all light, all color, all movement, all silence. Interesting. Agelessness is being aware of absolute. Now, this is a very interesting concept for us to think about, because absolute is so undefinable. It is so indescribable. So, can't put any definite foundation under it. But being aware of absolute. Now, when you are aware that there is something greater than what you have been expressing, how? Well, let's just come up with a definition for absolute right now. Absolute is the opposite of relative. Absolute is absolute is the beingness of the nothingness and the allness. Absolute is the isness and the is-notness. Absolute is the I think that pretty well covers it. The allness, the nothingness, the beingness, and the is-notness. Mm-hmm. Now, there is nothing else that needs to describe it. Now, can the absolute be conceived of in a relative form?
No.
Can the absolute be conceived of as an individual thing?
No.
The absolute can only be conceived of, if it can be conceived of at all, in the allness, in everythingness, and in the nothingness, which is the same thing. Okay, now, agelessness is being aware of absolute. So, how are we aware of allness and nothingness? How are we aware of isness and is-notness? How can we be aware of those things? Absolute, all agelessness is being aware of that. So, when you are in the stage of being ageless, you are in the stage of not having any awareness of anything that's around you. You have no relative qualities about you. You are completely unaware that there are people around you, that there are circumstances around you, that there are problems. You're unaware of all that stuff. Now, you see, if agelessness is being aware of absolute, then what does that mean? What that means is that we are aware of the allness and the nothingness. Now, you see, in agelessness, you have no time or space, of course. In agelessness, you have no relative quality of being, well, for instance, in the Tate, as they would be ageless, they would have no reality, no awareness of what's going on around them. They would have no awareness of a family, have no awareness of being needed. Now you say, well, that's not a very cool agelessness. If agelessness is without any relative framework, then I'm not really too interested in being ageless. I'd rather be a human being on planet Earth and aware of my creation and aware of the people that I'm with, and that's what I really want to be. Okay. Then agelessness is not for us if we want to be aware of the relative. Now, I have said anyone on the spiritual path can become a better lover, a better person in a family, and a better everything. But what did I say? Without the possession, yes. And another thing. Unconditional love. You see, unconditional love has no possession to it, of course. But unconditional love does not expect a return from anything or give anything. An unconditional love is. Now you look at a person who is unconditionally loving, and that person does not do it for a reason. They don't love someone else because they're wonderful. I told you the story about the mother who got the telephone call on the money, remember? Okay, well now this, just a small reiteration of it. The boy was being terrible in school and terrible everywhere. He was just a terribly mixed up teenage kid. He just didn't, everything was going wrong in his life and he was just a bad, bad boy. And so the teacher called his school and said, if you don't get that kid shaped up, he's out. He's expelled from school. And we don't care. We don't care. This is a problem between the parent and the child psychiatrist. We don't care. So the kid came home. It was a rainy afternoon. And the mother expected him to throw his rainy clothes on the floor. And she was just going to give him what for. Well, just before he opened the door, the phone rang. And the lady said, you have just won $30 million. Now the woman was so surprised and so delighted and so whatever she was, but she was just not herself anymore. And the boy opened the door and she says, Robert, come here. And so I said, oh boy, am I in for it now? Robert, and she put her arms around him and hugged him and snuggled him and said, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Robert, you're so wonderful, Robert, you're wonderful. And the kid has a rotten rattlesnake. He was just a bad apple, just bad, bad, bad. And the mother said, I love, she forgot all that. This $30 million made her, you know, incredulous. She wasn't herself. She was unconditionally loving. She didn't know she was unconditionally loved. She didn't want it. She didn't try to get it. It just was there. And I love you, I love you, I love you. And she said, Robert, go upstairs, change your clothes. We're going to go to the store and buy you that new computer you want, buy you that new skateboard you want, and on and on. Mom, and then he said, no, no, shut up, Robert, shut up, shut up. But you got it going. Go change your clothes. So he changed his clothes and came down. She took him shopping. They bought everything. Came home, she never mentioned $30 million. She came home, unconditional love. She said to her husband, he walked in the door, wow, the house is now complete that you're home. You're like the light of our family. How wonderful to have you. He said, good, I guess. And he says to his son, son, what happened to your mom? I don't know, Dad, but I like it. And so as the days went by, her relationship with her husband kept improving, improving, improving. And the boy started doing his schoolwork. He started behaving at home. He put his clothing away. He started doing all these things. He didn't know that he was healed by unconditional love. They didn't know that it was unconditional love that was working in that family and changing everything about that family. See, they didn't know that this agelessness was taking place within them, where they were untouched by the world around them, and they were just a total blessing to themselves and each other. They were the absolute, they were the fulfillment of what they really were as a being, you see. They were letting their divine nature flow right through, and it was wonderful. Now that is an indication of unconditional love, many more, but we don't know it. Basically, you cannot be unconditional love on purpose. You are unconditional love by accident. You're unconditional love because of the way in which you conduct your life. You don't judge. You don't possess. You let all those things behind. And you just love. You just love. You just love. And when you just love, then you're unconditionally loving. When you love for motivation or purpose to make them behave and make them cooperate with the family, then of course you have a problem. And you have a big problem. And the big problem is that while you could be ageless, you missed it. You missed being ageless because you were judgmental, because you were possessional. And those things destroy us on our ageless journey, because absolute In absolute, there's no possession. All just is. In absolute, there's no judgment. Everything is right. Because everything just is. It's only in the relative term, when we think about a situation or an object or something, that we make it judgmental. We make it something that we judge it with. And actually, in absolute, there's no judgment. There is no possession. There is no... And everything is there. Now, we want to... agelessness is being aware of absolute. We want to be so aware of absolute that we are tuned into this at its highest degree. That we're tuned into it. Now, it's not something you can do like unconditional love. You can't make yourself unconditionally loving. You can't make yourself absolute aware. You can only aim toward those virtues that lead toward being aware of your absolute self. And the virtues, we've mentioned them. Non-judgmentalism, no possession, untouched, and also...
Unconditional.
Unconditional, how about that? That's a good one. We had that with unconditional love, yeah, but unconditional. You see, those are the things, those are the key words, the key actions that move us into awareness of our absolute. And as we move into the awareness of our absolute, then we are defining ourselves as infinity, as allness. At lunch, you'll have the opportunity of hearing two tapes on these conditions. And you'll hear how ways in which you can consider doing it, some techniques that work. Now, we want to define absolute, and we can only do it when we are aware of infinity. Because when you're aware of the allness, the infinity, the eternality, when you're aware of those things, then the allness, then the absolute makes sense. But when you're not aware of it, it doesn't make sense, because those things are part and parcel of what absolute is. Now, a step toward being released from the relative. Ha! Most people don't want to be released from the relative, because the relative is kind of a comfortable place to be, kind of a comfortable place to live, a comfortable attitude to have for yourself, and you don't want to be released from it. Now, how is it that we say a step toward being released from the relative? Okay, let's go back to our story of the lady and the boy. She was ready to bite his head off. She could chew nails. She was so angry at her son for letting her down, for not being the beautiful son that she had envisioned him to be. Of course, it had been going on for a period of time, so it wasn't a great surprise, but she was just up to here with it, you know. She couldn't take it anymore. And one little reconditioning of her thinking took place with a telephone call saying, "You've just won $30 million. Now, when she got the telephone call that says, "You won that money," her mind did a couple click-clicks. And her mind said, where are my values? Where are my values? What are my values? Are my values that my son doesn't do his homework? Now, she didn't say this consciously, but this is what was going on through her mind. Are my values that my son is a good boy? Are my values that that whatever is outside of me is what I am inside of me? And she was coming to these conclusions, not consciously, but subliminally and subconsciously through this act of the money that was given to her. And she began to realize she is the creator of her world. She began, "I create my son wonderful. I create my son fantastic," which she had tried to do but wasn't successful. Then all of a sudden, unconditionally loving, she surrounded him with her arms and said, "I love you, I 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 love you. And, you know, you're the most wonderful boy in the world. You're fantastic." "That's not what you said to me at breakfast, you know. At breakfast you said, 'Get out of this house and don't come back, you know, till you change your mind, you know.' And now you just embrace me and say, 'Wow, and I don't know what to make of it, but I like it.'" See, "but I like it." And so he cooperated very fully with it. And then she threw in a few goodies of going shopping, you know. But you see, what she was doing, she was a step toward being released from the relative. She was releasing herself from the relative by letting go and loving her son unconditionally. She didn't know she was doing it, but she said, I might as well love him, you know. I might as well love him. And what the hell? If my son doesn't make anything of his life, we still have $30 million, you know. And we, you know, we do a lot of non-homework with that and stuff like that. But she didn't say that. But she just realized there was another value coming in there. And when we wake up to another value, then we are taking that step to releasing ourselves from the relative. And when, as we release ourselves from the relative, what we are doing is we're releasing ourselves from all of those things that tell us we're not divine, we're not absolute, we're not the allness, we're not that. And that is, those are things that, that should have been released a long time ago, but we haven't released them because it felt good, because that's the way everybody else talks. And all of you here in this room are still into what how everyone else talks. You are still into how everyone else talks. It's a shame, but you are. Because you have to understand, I tell you, listen, listen, listen. Listen so that we can get that flow into you, so that you can get those ideas into you, and then later regurgitate it, later chew it up, later think about it. And as you later think about it, you'll discard some things as totally unimportant, and you'll take on other things that are newly important. And that is the beauty of what you're doing. You want to be totally free of anything of the relative and totally into everything of the absolute. And say, well, now that's kind of tough. Okay, now let's just make a little illustration here. You have come to this seminar, all of you. And just because you're the most beautiful women on earth, that doesn't give you any right to be any different. But you have come to this seminar, and you have pledged yourself to follow the program of the seminar, to listen and digest and then question it later. Listen, digest, and question it later. But your mind is so full of questions as we go along. Sometimes you want to question it as we go along, which is okay. But it is not your commitment. Because your commitment was, wait. Your commitment was, let's see what the total picture is. Let's see what's going on. Now, if you would stop me in the beginning of, in the middle of telling the story about the boy and the mother and the 30 million, you wouldn't have gotten the point of the story. If you had stopped me just before he walked in the door, and you said, now, what was the mother going to do to him? You know, was she going to really beat him up? Was she going to spank him? Did she have a whip there to beat him? And was she really going to, I mean, that, whatever that was totally unimportant, because zip, we went right into it. Come here. I love you, I love you, I love you, you know. And mom, you know, what is all this about? And you see, if you stumble along the way with questions that will answer themselves as you go along, then you don't get the big picture as quickly as you can, or if at all. But oftentimes the big picture is lost by listening to the tiny questions you sometimes have. Now, I'm not trying to say the questions you have are not important, or the answers you have, because each one of you are giving something exceptional to this seminar. But I want you to remember, you're here to listen, and you're here to absorb, and you're here to spit out whatever is not happy for you afterwards, but not during it. Because when you are doing a change with your computer, and you are going to clean it up, and you go to your control panel, and you go to your erase or delete programs or add programs, and then if you're in a delete program, and this, and the word comes up, do you want to delete all of the material of this program so you no longer have that program on your computer any longer? You say yes. And then it says, before the final death knell, it says, now, do you want to release all these things? And you have to say yes again. And then it says, do you also want to release the files that are being used by other programs? And if you say yes on that, then your other programs will not work, because many of them are dependent on the files that that program uses too. So, rather than having 100 times the same file in your computer, the computer has the file once in the computer rather than having it 100 times. You follow me? And so it takes up less space and it's more efficient. Now, if you inadvertently or unintelligently erase that all files, you might erase a very important file for the operation of your total computer, and you might have to really make some great changes in it. Now, we have the opportunity of not judging, of not doing different things. What we want to do is we don't want to erase those files that affect other things. We have told ourselves so many times in our life that we don't ever want to see that person in our life again. We don't ever want to see that man in our life again, or that woman in our life again, or whatever, because they were not nice to us. And then they come back and they say, well, give me the diamonds and jewels that I gave you. Give me the furs that I gave you, and give me those things back. You know, well, oh no, those are mine. We must give those things back, because as long as we hold on to them, we're holding on to that person in our life. That person is still in our life. Now you say, well, it's mine, he gave it to me. No, no, no. It was yours, the two of yous, the two of you together, because it was a mutual thing. It was something of your relationship together. So when your relationship ceases to be, then you dispose of it. You give it back to him. But can you see how that may have been part of another story? You might have let your daughter wear the fur coat and told her that she could have it because it was given to you, and now you got to get it back from your daughter to give back to the man who gave it to you. And your daughter says, well, Mom, what's all this foolishness? And you say, I don't want anything of that person around here, because I don't want to bring him back in my life at all. I'm ready for a new relationship, a new person. But Mom, it won't hurt to keep the coat. No, we don't keep anything that doesn't belong to us. It belonged to my relationship with him. And as long as I had a relationship with him, I could do anything I wanted with that coat. But since I don't have a relationship with him anymore, the coat goes back to him. You know, I say, well, I don't think it's that way. Now, it's not the coat. It's not the value. It's the principle that you don't want anything of that association in your life. Now, if you're going to keep in your life the association of things that are disadvantageous to you, then you can be sure they're going to keep coming up and keep coming up and keep coming up. As I told you, never find anything on the street. If you must find it, turn it into the police department, but don't keep it yourself. Don't ever do it, because it's going to be a burden to you all of your life. And that same thing with that fur coat. It's going to be a burden to you all of your life. Your daughter will say, I got this from Mama and she got this from John, you know. And who's John? Oh, he's one of my mother's first boyfriends. She's had 60 of them since then. Oh, your mom is a busy lady. See, she didn't want to say all that, but that was her feeling. That was her attitude. And so she lets that attitude out, and the attitude destroys everything too. So, we want to be released from the relative. And the way to be released from the relative is to go into the gentleness of self. And the absolute is the gentleness of self. The mother reaching to her child and saying, I love you, I love you, I love you, is the gentleness of self. the mother going to her kids who are being very, very bad and just calling them in and saying, hey, you guys, I love you. Come here, let me give you a hug. But mom, we just broke the window. We just did this. We did this. Come on, let me give you a hug. And what's done is done. And there's no sense in letting a lack of love be in the area, because you want that love to be a foundation, a stone. So absolute is gentleness of self. When you have this gentleness of self, this ability to love regardless of outer appearances, great and wonderful things take place in your life. Fantastic things. And when you're ready, then you'll have it, but not until you're ready. And the reason you won't have it until you're ready is this. If you get it before you have prepared yourself to receive it, then you will think, I can keep that coat. I can keep those diamonds. He gave them to me. He didn't say, if I married him, he would give them to me. If we had a relationship, he'd give it to me. Or if I went to bed with him, he'd give it to me. He just gave it to me. There were no strings attached, so it's mine. Well, you see, that attitude could just utterly destroy you. That attitude of saying that you want something that really is not yours, that's some found merchandise. Those are found things, and they don't belong to you. They only belong to you if the person who gave them is still there giving them to you. You know? Think about that. Because a lot of times we play this game, and the same is with love. Does John still love you? As long as I love him. And what if you stop loving him? Then he'll stop loving me. Then do those things belong?
What a condition.
Conditional. Yeah, and it's always conditional. But the thing is, absolute is gentleness of self. It is the gentleness of yourself, because in that there are no conditions. In that there is no possession. In that there's only, like the kids, they say to me, and adults sometimes say it too, they say, well, if everything belongs to everybody, and if I'm God, then everything belongs to me, then everything is mine. So I can have whatever I want to have. I can take whatever I want to take, because it belongs to me. And I say to them, yes, that's true. That's true. But did you, as God, give people the authority to have things and enjoy things themselves? Did you, as God, create people having these things? Yeah. Then are you going to create them not having them? Or are you going to create you having them? Or are you going to create you having some new things? Or what are you going to create? And you see, right away, they get into the role of what it means to be God, of what it means to be the giver, of what it means to be the creator, of what it means to create for themselves if they want. I don't want Dorothea's house. I want a house just like it. I want a house that's perhaps just like it, that as beautiful as it is, with a picket fence around and a little garden and the little cows mooing in the backyard and stuff like that. and a little farmer boy out there taking care of the cows, you know. Right, Dorothea?
Oh, right.
All right.
Especially taking care of them.
As long as they're being taken care of, right. But you see, I don't want her picket fence or her house. I want mine. I want what I create. And so this is why absolute is gentleness of self. It is everyone having what they create. Now, if I create something for Ellen that is absolutely gorgeous, and I say, oh, I wish I'd kept that, you know, that's foolish. All I have to do is say, I think I will create one for myself, but in mine, I would like it to be able to do this, this, and this. You see, so already you have a different attitude, you have a different way of thinking about it for yourself. And this is what you want to work on. It's kind of fun. Okay, now, we come into the last part here, which is kind of interesting. Absolute is all light, all color, all movement, all silence. Absolute is all light. How can absolute be light when absolute is darkness? Absolute is light and absolute is darkness. Absolute is allness and absolute is nothingness. How can it be light? Well, it can be light. because it's all light and it's all darkness. And I'm talking about the all light right now. And I'm not talking about the all darkness. Now, how can absolute be all light for you? How can you see that? What does all light mean to you? Now, light usually means illumination. It usually means awareness. It usually means being awake. It usually means tuned in. So now, are we tuned in on our absolute awareness with the light? What do you see when you turn on the light? I have a lamp next to my bed, and I reach up and I touch it, you know, and as I touch it, it goes on. And as I touch it, it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and then it turns out. Now, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Right.
And it works just perfect. So I reach up in the middle of the night sometimes and stretch and touch the light, and then it goes on, and I got the light on. Or I reach over in another direction, and I accidentally touch the telephone button, and it turns on the telephone. Boom! You know, and I think to myself, boy, oh boy, oh boy, I have a very busy bedside here. But it's okay. The thing is, just learn to keep your arms under the covers. But always there's light. Always there's light. And it is beautiful. When you begin to think in the light, well, what does light mean to you, Dorothy? What does light mean to you?
Airiness.
Cheeriness?
Airiness.
Airiness. Like openness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Light means airiness, openness, and nothing hidden. What else does light mean to you?
Enjoyment, because okay. You're seeing everything.
Light means airiness, openness, enjoyment. Now, what if light means airiness, openness, and enjoyment, what does the lack of light mean then? Would it mean the lack of airiness, openness, and enjoyment?
You're being deprived of something.
What's that, please?
You're being denied of something, deprived.
Okay, well now, let's just say that you're a blind person, and you're walking along, and you don't see anything. Is it true that you don't see anything?
No, because they have a feelingness.
A blind person has sensitivity for space and time and objects and what have you. Now, let's just take that for a moment. If a blind person has the sensitivity for these things, why don't you? If a blind person can walk along and know where a chair is or a door is or a street is or whatever, why can't we? Well, we can, it's just that we haven't trained ourselves in that awareness. Yeah. Now, is that sensitivity something that comes with being blind? Mm-hmm. Or is it something that you choose to train yourself in? No. You see, as difficult as that would be, and that is difficult, to train yourself into being aware, how long does it take you to do it? Like that. A snap. It only takes you a snap because you have instant desire to know it. You have instant attention to it. You are instantly aware. Now, my brother Ray went up to blind school for a couple of weeks in Palo Alto, and in the blind school, they taught him how to live as a blind person. Now, he still can see light and colors, and he still can do a lot of these things, but he learned how to see as a blind person in 2 weeks. And now that's rather remarkable, isn't it? How did he do that? Do you think that they had him go around with a blindfold on? He's supposed to be blind, you know. Do you think they had him go around in difficult places where he'd stumble over things?
No. Well, you, desire again.
What's that?
Desire again.
The desire, right. He had the desire to learn something there, and he did. And he also is a collector of junk. And so they gave him all their junk. They gave him wheelchairs, electric wheelchairs, they gave him this, that, and the other thing. They gave him a big computer and a big screen to read things on and what have you. Now, is he going to use them?
Yes.
No. No, he's not going to use them. Because he doesn't care. He feels sorry for himself right now. And feeling sorry for himself, he's not applying it. He came back and he thought, oh boy, I'm going to do all these things now. And then he realized he had to do it himself. And that's not easy. When you got to do it yourself, then, because at the blind school, everybody's showing him everything, telling him how wonderful he was, telling him how good he was, and at home, he just had himself. And so the motivation, again, was not there. And perhaps he will come out of the doldrum. Perhaps he will choose to take all the toys, the junk that he was given, and utilize it. But already, he started giving it away. He said, Herb, you want my computer? You want this? You want that? You know? I said, Ray, don't give those things away. You keep them. Wait, who knows, a couple months, you might change your mind. You might want to work on them. You might want to do things. I said, I don't need your things. I would appreciate having them, of course, but I don't want them. I want you to know that I'd appreciate it so you don't feel that you're giving away for nothing, but I want you to appreciate it first. So, you see, he was moving away from his divinity. He's moving away from his awareness, from his absolute quality. And he's moving away because he felt sorry for himself. Now, this is what moves all of us out of our spiritual reality. We feel sorry for ourselves. And oh, do we feel sorry for ourselves. We feel that we weren't in on the beginning where they gave out all the toys and trinkets. We weren't in on the beginning when the knowledge was passed out and the wisdom and so forth, and other people are smarter than us. Well, did you know that Bill Gates is not all that smart? Bill Gates is intelligent and he's wise, and he learned by experience, and Bill Gates did happen to come up with the right thing at the right time, you know, to make a lot of money. But it didn't mean that he was so brilliant. It didn't mean that he was so wise. He just did the right thing at the right time. Now, could you do that? Could you come up with the right thing at the right time? Sure. Right now, could you come up with the awareness of your divinity? Could you come up with the awareness of your oneness as being absolute? Absolute is all light, all color, all movement, all silence. We've been talking about silence, the silence of the darkness, where you can't see anything and you don't know anything. That's tough. Imagine living in a silent world. Now, I want to give an illustration here. How many of you know Helen Keller?
Yeah.
Helen Keller was a blind girl, born blind. Not born blind, but she went blind as a young girl, I believe. And all of her life, she was blind and could not see. And yet, she wrote some of the most impressive books on philosophy. She did some of the most impressive things, and she went out and spoke to groups about being blind and how living with blindness and how to be a significant person with it. You see, you and I, too often, we say just because we can't see, we can't do anything. Like the Tates, they said they have this curse of immortality. The world would call that a blessing, but they had it added as a curse. And they had it as a curse because they didn't know how to apply it. They didn't know how to apply it. They could have done such beautiful things with that blessing, we say, looking on from the outside. But they could have. They could have done such beautiful things, but instead, they felt sorry for themselves. Did they feel sorry for themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. Did they feel that they were given a bad rush? They did. And were they given a bad rush? They were. You see, this is what happens. We can have everything, and you do have everything. I've given you a great deal, probably more than you will be using, but I've given you a great deal. Now, will you use it? Will you have everything? Will you apply it? Or will you think of the little dramatic incidences that took place here and dwell upon those and think that those were things that want to control your attitude about what you've gotten here? Yeah, that could be. That could be, and you want to be on top of that and be aware of that. So, we're talking here, agelessness is being aware of absolute. Absolute is all light, all color, all movement, all silence. How do you conceive of all color? All color is, we call, white. Now, why is it that there are a mixture of colors? Unnecessary. White is all color. We have all color in white. Why would we want to have the mixture? Why would we want to have a blue and a red and a brown and a green and a gold and purple? Why do we want those colors?
For fun.
Okay. Then why do we not get right into all color? What does all color mean?
One color.
It means every color is one color. But it means every color is one color. It doesn't mean only one color. It means every color is one color. And this is our point, that every color is one color. And so as we are aware that every color is one color, then we are aware of absolute. But if we are aware just of white, we're aware of absolute. And if we're aware of the individual colors, we're aware of what? Relative. The relative. Interesting, huh? So, all color is absolute, and of course, absolute is made up of every color, which makes up all color. Yeah. And then all movement. Where does all movement take place?
In no movement.
Do you know what still photography is? Still photography, yes you do. You take one picture, that's a still photography.
Right.
Now, if you take motion picture photography, what is that?
Movement.
I'm sorry?
Movement.
Yes, movement, but how? Click, 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 click.
Flowing.
Huh?
Flowing.
A flow, yeah. But it's a click, 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 click. Now, what makes it appear to be a flow? The speed at which the click clicks are put in front of your eyes, the speed at which the flow goes. Now, if you have a very slow flow, what do you have? A very awkward looking person running. If the flow is faster,
life.
You see, so the movement is tremendously important to absolute. Because in absolute, the majority of the things that you experience on this earth are in slow movement. Otherwise you wouldn't see it. But going on around us is fast movement. Very, very fast movement. I read a book one time, science fiction book, by Ronald Hubbard of the Scientology group. But a beautiful science fiction book. And in it, he spoke about this world, like our world, and the world had many areas to it. And this person, the character of the story, went into this one world, went into this one area of the world, one community. And the minute he stepped past the threshold of the city, something happened to him. The world slowed down. And his steps were like this. But he didn't know that because he was doing it. And he got himself into an advantage point in his story, which he wrote, so that he could see the people as they were moving. And in the advantage point, he was in his normal speed. And then he looked at the people on this slow movement. And he thought, oh my goodness sakes, you know, if I could keep my fast speed while they're in their slow speed, I could have some interesting experiences. But, you see, that's the possibility of creating that. That's the possibility of creating slow motion. We do it with our camera. We do it with our film. I have a tape recorder, and on the tape recorder, it says normal, and you play it normal, and then you press the button, and it's slowly. I like to speak very quickly, but sometimes I speak more slowly, and when I speak slowly, I am. And you see, it becomes quieter, and it becomes denser, or not dense. What is it becoming? What is
slower is denser.
What is fast speed?
Fast speed is transparent.
It's very dense. Low speed is like this. And your wavelengths are very far apart. And fast speed, your wavelengths are very close together, so it's a denser thing. Now, Sylvia, why would you say that the slow speed was denser? Just because it feels that way?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you see, the slow speed is a slow modulation on the sine curve. And the slow modulation on the sine curve is a long time between each post. And the fastest, so within one segment, you would have 200 or 300 fast and only 2 or 3 slow. But that's just the way it works. Okay, now, what has that got to do with anything? Movement. We all move in various levels. Ellen, Sylvia, tell the story about the man who wanted to have God give him some money.
Well, there was a man praying to God and said, I want to ask you some questions. And God said, well, go right ahead. And he said, well, God, what does $1 million mean to you? And God said, well, to me, $1 million is just like a penny. And then the guy asked, well, what is time to you, God? And God said, well, time to me is, let's say, 1 million years to me is like a second. And then the man said, well, God, would you give me $1 million? And God said, yes, just wait a second.
So you see, they're all relative. And when you play that relative game of speed and time and things like that, then you're kind of limited. Now, our other point here, all is silence. How can absolute be all silent? What, who hears absolute? Who knows what absolute sounds like? Does absolute sound like anything at all?
No.
Why then would we say absolute is silence?
It comes the closest to what we can.
What happens in silence?
Everything. Everything is.
What?
Everything is.
Everything is in the silence. In the silence, it is a connection between the allness and the allness. And that's why we list here, absolute is all light, all color, all movement, all silence. Kind of interesting stuff. Well, let's prepare for our lunch and know that we've had a morning that we'll long remember, and that all is good and very good, and that I love you very much.
I love you.